The 100 Years' War, the Duguesclin period. John of Gaunt lands in France, 1373. Well, the year 1373 was one of the best years for English naval operations in Edward III's entire reign. The English fleet had, as the Chancellor told Parliament in November of 1373, confronted the enemy with skill and enterprise. Much of this was due to the Earl of Salisbury. What was perhaps most remarkable was that his operations had been carried out with much the same forces as had so completely failed the year before. None of the new barges ordered the previous November were ready in time to take part in the capture of Saint-Malo, and only three were ready for the relief of Brest. The rest were delivered late and in some cases incomplete and without their tackle. Crewing difficulties were a serious constraint on the use of these vessels even when they were delivered. The admirals did not have nearly enough Genoese oarmen to man them. Most of the crews were simply pressed men, drawn from a small pool of English seamen who were not already serving on requisitioned merchantmen. The main reason for the English success at sea in 1373 was the strange passivity of their French and Castilian enemies. Early in the year, the mere threat of their appearance had emptied the sea lanes along the south coast of England. Yet the galleys did nothing to justify their fearsome reputation. The French barges spent most of the summer at their bases in the Seine River as a result of a backlog of maintenance work in the Rouen arsenal. There is some evidence that they also experienced the same sort of difficulty in recruiting local oarsmen as the English did. The ships eventually succeeded in putting to sea in mid-July, by which time it was too late to interfere with the English expedition to Saint-Malo. There was no attempt to disrupt the long drawn-out process of transporting John of Gaunt's army to Calais. There were no recorded raids on the English coast. When the Army of the Sea returned to Harfleur to resupply in early August, many of the troops assigned to it were recalled to reinforce the defenses of the north against John of Gaunt. Admiral Renier Grimaldi undertook another short cruise in middle of the month with six Italian galleys of his own squadron. But after 3 months, they were back in port preparing for a winter layup. As for the Castilians, their galley fleet had arrived in the Seine in June, accompanied by a number of sailing ships. The Castilians probably participated in Grimaldi's two cruises. There was at least one direct encounter with Salisbury's fleet, which resulted in the capture of three of the Castilian sailing ships. Otherwise, they seem to have done very little. The absence of Ambrogio Boccanegra, with his aggressive tactics and skill in handling large fleets at sea, may have had something to do with this. He had retired from Castilian service after the siege of Lisbon. The fleet sent to the Channel was commanded by his successor, Fernand Sanchez de Tovar. Sanchez was a soldier, not a seaman, and a native Castilian in an office traditionally monopolized by the Genoese. He would later prove himself to be a competent practitioner of guerrilla warfare in the Navy and the master of coastal tip-and-run raid, but neither skill was much in evidence in his first campaign. Yet for all their ineffectiveness at sea, the French and Castilians' fleet achieved their purpose by their mere existence. In the long run, their impact would not be measured in burning villages, captured hulks, or bloated corpses washing up on the beaches of southern England, but in money. Leaving aside shipping costs associated with John of Gaunt's expedition, the English naval operation of 1373 cost Edward III's government more than £40,000. This was more than the entire yield of the parliamentary subsidy for that year. It was nearly half of the government's average annual expenditure on warfare. The weight of naval expenditures in the government's accounts had grown substantially since 1369. A tendency which persisted for many years and was not matched by any increase in the government's resources. This seriously inhibited the conduct of military operations in France. Well, John of Gaunt crossed the Channel in the middle of July 1373, followed shortly by the Duke of Brittany. Three English earls joined the army, as well as Henry Lord Percy, the greatest figure on the Scottish march, who had had the standing of an earl. Several of the great captains of past campaigns were there, including Caverley and Newitt. The whole army numbered about 6,000 men-at-arms and archers on payroll, and half as many number originally planned back in November. With the mass of pages, varlets, clerks, artificers, and others, there must have been about 9,000 mounted men altogether. The process of shipping the whole force across the Channel with all its horses, equipment, and supplies was not completed until August the 9th. On the following day, the army formed itself in two columns, one under the command of the Duke of Brittany, which marched directly south towards Esdin, and then turned southeast, skirting around Amiens and reaching the Somme just east of the city. The other, under John of Gaunt himself, followed a roughly parallel route about 40 miles east of them via Saint-Omer and Arras. The army covered about 10 miles a day, leaving villages and farms in flames across a broad front. Gaunt was keen to get to the southwest and made no attempt to attack any of the walled towns or castles on the route. On about August the 19th, the two columns met on the Somme River. The appearance of an English army at Calais wrong-footed the French king's ministers. They were expecting a landing in Brittany. As a result, almost all of the available troops were in that peninsula, tied down by sieges of Brest and Durval. There were barely 600 men on the Calais march. It was not until the first week of July that the French king, alerted by the scale of the English troop movements in the Channel, realized what was happening. A second army was summoned to assemble at Amiens in August. The Duke of Burgundy, who was on his way to Brittany, was abruptly recalled and put in command of it. Duke Philip entered Amiens with about 700 men-at-arms on July the 14th, 1373. He was obliged to pass more than a month idle in the city, as the laborious process of recruiting was put in hand and troops made their way across northern France to join him. He still had only about 4,000 men under his command when John of Gaunt marched out of Calais. The English forded the Somme not far from the walled city of Bray. A few miles further south, they burned the town of Roye, and the terrified population crowded for safety in the tower of the fortified church. Then they passed for a week on the banks of the River Arve and the open plain of Vendômois, daring the Duke of Burgundy to attack them. While they waited, the Duke of Brittany composed a letter of defiance to King Charles V, the formal renunciation of his homage, which the law required of any man intended to fight against his lord. But John's letter was more than a point of form. It was an angry and self-righteous denunciation of the French king for invading his duchy, capturing his walled towns and castles, imprisoning and killing his supporters, and committing every other irreparable villainy. "I hold you to be my enemy," John wrote. "Do not be surprised if I come now to injure you and your supporters and avenge the wrongs you have done to me." End of quote. The French army left Amiens on August the 17th, 1373, and headed southeast, reaching Soissons on the 22nd. Philip of Burgundy followed what had become the traditional French strategy of avoiding battle. He kept his distance from the English, moving from one walled town to the other, always keeping the bulk of his army between the enemy and Paris. The population of the Place Plat was ordered in the towns and castles. Garrisons were put in all the more significant walled places. Unprotected bridges were broken. In the French capital, the king and his advisors struggled to reinforce him. Northern cities were commanded to find infantry and crossbowmen. The troops of the Army of the Sea were urgently recalled from Harfleur. A new corps was raised from late arrivals and placed under the command of Charles V's youthful and mediocre uncle, Philip, Duke of Orléans. All indications are the French commanders thought that John of Gaunt and John de Montfort were heading for Brittany. They therefore had a difficult dilemma. The Constable's army in Brittany was badly needed to help keep the English away from Paris, but withdrawing it would expose the major cities of the duchy to attack. With some misgivings, Charles V decided towards the end of August to recall it. Olivier de Clisson paused before leaving to patch up a truce with Knowles's garrison at Durval. Knowles himself was far away at Brest. His lieutenants had given up hope of relief. They cannot have known how tightly stretched the French resources were. So they agreed to surrender the castle on September the 29th, if no relief force had appeared by then. Clisson took hostages for the performance of the undertaking, but he must have wondered after the affair at Brest whether they were worth much. In early September, he too was on the road to Paris. The Vicomte de Rohan was left to defend the crown's interests in Brittany with a retinue of just 300 men. To fill the gap, Charles took the remarkable step of summoning the Duke of Anjou from Languedoc. Anjou was ordered to leave at once for Brittany, bring every available man with him. He received his summons toward the end of August in the Dordogne Valley. He was on his way back by the beginning of September with 2,500 men with him. So it got a little confused and everybody had to do some shifting. So we'll see how this works out next time. Now, the sources for this, The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.